Good afternoon and welcome to this news event sponsored by the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. The purpose of today's report, today's news event, is to release a new report from the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy on the Tennessee Valley Authority's Bellefonte Nuclear Reactor Project. You'll be hearing today from a total of two speakers. Before I introduce them as a group and then individually to deliver their remarks, I'd like to invite the operator on the line to explain to you how it is that the Q&A period will work and how it is that you may participate in the Q&A period.
During the question and answer session, you may ask a question by pressing star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone. If you would like to remove yourself from the queue, you may press star, then 2. Again, it's star, then 1 to ask a question.
And we will have the operator back on the line so that you can hear those instructions once again when we get to the Q&A period. And I want to assure you that we'll have adequate time for your questions during the Q&A period. At this time, what we'd like to do is introduce our two main speakers who will be delivering opening remarks. They'll be speaking in the following order. You'll hear, first of all, from Stephen Smith, who is Executive Director of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. He will be followed by report author Arnold Gunderson, who is a nuclear engineer and energy advisor at Fair Winds Associates, Incorporated. Again, our first speaker today, Stephen Smith, Executive Director of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy.
Great. Thank you, Scott. Again, my name is Stephen Smith. I'm the Executive Director of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. The Southern Alliance for Clean Energy is a regional nonprofit organization that is involved in energy policy and environmental advocacy in primarily five southern states, Tennessee, North and South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida. Although because of the Tennessee Valley Authority and its reach, we do work in Alabama, Mississippi, Kentucky also. The focus of today's call is to share information that we have compiled in advance of an anticipated decision by the TVA Board of Directors next week, August 18th, on their likelihood to proceed with attempting to finish the troubled Bellefonte nuclear reactors in northeast Alabama. SACE has a long history of Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, SACE, has a long history of tracking the Tennessee Valley Authority. We've worked closely with TVA on a number of projects, and we've raised concerns and watchdogged the agency over the years. And we've been aware of the Bellefonte situation for a long time. Unfortunately, TVA seems to be redoubling its efforts to complete this reactor. And if you review the report, There's a very detailed history, a troubled history of how this reactor has sort of been on again, off again with TVA's involvement going all the way back to the early 1970s. Now it appears, coming out of a 20-year planning process, that TVA feels compelled to move forward. SACE has reviewed a number of the issues at the Bellefonte reactor and have worked with other organizations in the region and have contacted and worked with professionals like Arnie, who we'll hear from in a minute, to really go into some detail about these concerns. And Arnie has listed a number of them, and we'll go into some detail. But let me just tell you what has recently really raised my concern to an unprecedented level, is that when we were looking at the situation at Bellefonte, it came to our attention that there's been some serious structural issues with the containment vessel. And as Arnie will outline, this is a unique containment vessel to this particular reactor design. And as we dug into this, we also have been watching closely a situation in Florida where Progress Energy has a nuclear reactor called the Crystal River 3 reactor that has been experiencing unprecedented issues with its containment vessel. It turns out that containment vessel is the exact same design as the TVA Bellefonte reactor containment vessel. The Southern Alliance for Clean Energy has intervened in the proceedings before the Florida Public Service Commission and taken a deep look at these issues. And these issues are unprecedented in the sense that this reactor has experienced cracking or delamination both in a procedure that was done at the reactor to try to open the reactor containment up for a repair and an upgrade, and then also in after years of study and attempting to really understand how to fix the problem, they went in and it had additional cracking at that containment vessel. Given the situation coming out of Fukushima, and now that we've all experienced exploding containment vessels and reactors, it raises a much heightened level of concern when you have an aged reactor with structural problems in its containment vessel, like we now have at the Crystal River 3 reactor and what TVA may be attempting to do with Bellefonte. The other concern that we have is that TVA announced yesterday that they're going to now have to delay the schedule for completing Watts Bar 2, which is a nuclear project they have under construction. TVA also has had a number of problems with their Browns Ferry Unit 1 reactor and has gotten a very low score from the NRC and has recently, because of the heat in the southeast, had to again derate those reactors because of hot water issues. We're concerned that as TVA struggles to manage their existing fleet, adding the additional risk, and there's a whole set of issues that come with Bellefonte on top of the issues of properly managing their existing fleet, will cause further stress to the agency's ability to manage all these projects simultaneously. Anybody who understands the long history of TVA knows that they had gotten themselves in this situation before in the 1970s when they had 17 nuclear power projects under construction at various stages, and they got into a terrible situation there, had to cancel 8 of the reactors and experienced the largest utility debt in the nuclear power program of any utility in history. And so we, again, have these concerns that TVA, in their ambition to expand their nuclear power projects, are being overly aggressive and not properly reviewing and characterizing the risk. So we believe strongly that TVA's board should not make the decision on August 18th to complete this reactor. We question whether this reactor could ever successfully be completed, both because of its age, its unique design, and the set of issues that you'll hear about and can read about in our report. And we believe that it is more proper for TVA to look at a balanced energy portfolio that is not so dependent on nuclear power. And while many people know that our organization has never been a strong proponent of nuclear power, we feel particularly that the Bellefonte reactor is extraordinarily unique and that it is an unprecedented decision that will put TVA at risk, TVA's ratepayers, TVA's the environment which TVA has stewardship over, and we think ultimately can damage the whole nuclear power industry because this reactor is so likely to have such a troubled future given its troubled past. So with that, let me stop and turn it over to Arnie, and then I look.
You just heard the opening statement of Stephen Smith, Executive Director of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. The report, the news release and report that you just heard Stephen Smith refer to is available to you on the SACE website at www.cleanenergy.org. On the homepage, you'll see a video at the top of the page that walks through the main report findings. If you turn to the news and reports back page of the website at cleanenergy.org and go to the press room, you'll see that the top item is the news release that's being unveiled today with the study in a link embedded in it. Again, that's in the press room behind the news and reports section of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy website at www.cleanenergy.org. At this time, we'll proceed to our second of two speakers and our last speaker before the Q&A period, report author Arnold Gunderson, who is a nuclear engineer and energy advisor at Fair Winds Associates Incorporated.
Hi, thank you. Thank you very much for listening in here. Just briefly, I'll talk about my background. I was a senior vice president in the nuclear industry with bachelor's and master's in nuclear, and I approached this report as a risk assessment to the board of directors. What is risky about building Bellefonte, given how it got to where it is? And I think it really breaks down. There are scheduler risks. There are financial risks. And then even after it gets constructed, if it ever does, there will be increased operational risks as well. There were seven areas that I discovered that I believe are risky, and if I were a member of the TVA board, I would be concerned about. I'll touch on them briefly and then go back to the three that I think are the newest information. First, Bellefonte is built by Babcock & Wilcox. There's only 8 Babcock & Wilcox reactors in the world right now out of a little over 400. So only 2% of the reactors worldwide are of this design. And within that 2%, this design, the Babcock-Wilcox at Bellefonte, is larger than the other 8. And that will, of course, when it goes operational, if it ever does, testing a new reactor core with new reactor fuel introduces operational uncertainty on top of schedule and money. Second, I'll spend a little more time on this, is that there's been some groundwater intrusion over the years, and the groundwater is the pumps were shut off during the period when Tennessee Valley Authority was cannibalizing the plant. That has weakened the foundation. I'll come back to that just briefly. Quality assurance was eliminated when Tennessee Valley Authority decided to dismantle the plant. And, of course, trying to recreate that which no longer exists is a major problem. There's some historical precedents there that show that it's not likely that they'll be able to succeed in constructing this plant because of the quality assurance breakdown. The plant's been cannibalized, and when that happens, when a nuclear plant goes into a mothball status, a deferred status, there still are some rigid controls in place for the atmosphere of the pipe. Dry gases are inside the pipes to prevent rust. Certain materials are not allowed inside the containment. Halogen light bulbs, for instance, are not, because they can cause cracking if the reactor ever started. So, but when the deferred status was eliminated and the unit was cannibalized, all of those limits were no longer in place. And so recovering from a plant that has been that has had massive components removed is in fact quite difficult. Steve touched on the containment issues at Crystal River and the wraparound to Bellefonte, I'll discuss that in a little bit more depth. Okay, so I think for those of you who've been following Bellefonte, the fact that it was cannibalized and that there's a QA breakdown are probably not news. But when it was left its deferred status and was no longer licensed by the NRC, TVA turned off the sump pumps that were put in place to prevent groundwater from eating away at the foundations. When you, if you've ever had a house in wet ground, you'll know that the water will attack the concrete and strip out the calcium and weaken the concrete. Well, TVA had a program in place until 2005 that pulled the water out of the foundations to prevent them from weakening. But then they deliberately and knowingly turned those pumps off for a period of several years, and groundwater intrusion has adversely affected the integrity of their foundations. In other words, the foundations are weaker now than they were in 2005 when they turned those pumps off. Now, related to this is the containment issues. When the crews were inside the reactor back in 2008, 2009, they heard what they thought was a shotgun blast. And it took about 100 days to find, but what happened was that one of the tensioning tendons that holds this concrete in place blew up. It failed, and it failed catastrophically, making what they thought to be a shotgun blast. Well, Tennessee Valley Authority began looking at all of the tendons in this reactor and found that some of them contained a material called a sulfite, which shouldn't be there, and it is corrosive. And some of them also had moisture in it, which again shouldn't be there and is corrosive. So all of the tendons that are holding this plant together are in question. Now, this wraps around to the Crystal River containment. Crystal River is a similar plant, a little bit smaller. It's a 177 design, Bellefonte's 205, but it's the same conceptual design for the containment. And when Florida, when Progress Energy detensioned the containment at Crystal River, they induced a 60-foot long by 20-foot wide crack in the containment. After years of study on how to prevent that from occurring again, they tightened the containment back up and induced another crack in a different location. So the issue of tensioning a containment after it's been constructed, or detensioning as well, there's not a lot of engineering, a successful engineering behind it. Now, that same process that failed twice now at Crystal River is going to have to occur at Bellefonte, but for two reasons. First off, Bellefonte cannibalized their steam generators, and they're going to have to cut a hole in the side of the containment to put new steam generators in, which is what happened at Crystal River. But on top of that, the Bellefonte containment has at least one tendon that has blown up and others that have moisture and sulfites. So we won't know for sure if the Crystal River repair job is a success until about 2014. Crystal River will be shut down for 5 years to make this repair. And if I were on the board of TVA, I would say, my God, this is an awful risky venture when it's been tried twice at an identical plant and failed twice at an identical plant. The last thing I'd like to touch on, and again, these 7 points are expanded upon in the report and in the video that are on the SACE webpage, but history is not on Tennessee Valley Authority side in this. There was a plant called the Zimmer plant, and it was 98% complete, and the quality assurance records were not in order. Of course, Bellefonte has acknowledged that their quality assurance records are not in order. Zimmer got to 98% complete, and the management decided to throw in the towel and convert it to a coal plant after billions of dollars of excess expenditures. The other historical precedent is Washington Public Power Systems, Washington Nuclear Plant 1. It was identical to Bellefonte. And in 2003, the decision was made to evaluate whether or not Bellefonte should be whether or not Washington Nuclear's plant should be rebuilt. It was 65% rebuilt at the time, and it had not been abandoned. It was under this deferred program. It had the quality assurance. There were people making sure rodents weren't eating the wires and all that stuff at Washington Nuclear. So in a lot of ways, Washington Nuclear was better than Bellefonte. And the board of directors out there made the exact opposite decision that TVA appears to be making. TVA seems to be believing that they can construct this in about 6 years and for about $4 to $5 billion. Those are the same numbers that they were using 8 years ago in Washington, so that the board in Washington had a better plant, one that was not abandoned and cannibalized, and looked at the same numbers and made exactly the opposite decision that that Tennessee Valley Authority appears to be making. To pick up my last comment on Steve's comment about the resources available to Tennessee Valley Authority, you know, they've got troubled operating plants, including Browns Ferry. On top of that, they've got the delay at Watts Bar. And we have a saying in the nuclear industry that the sheet is too small for the bed. It appears to me that as TVA tries to apply management resources to one of their plants, other plants become less resources go to those other plants. And I'm convinced as a senior manager that if Delafunt gets thrown into this mix, in fact, the sheet will definitely be too small for the bed. Okay, thank you very much.
That was the opening statement of our second speaker, report author Arnold Gunderson, a nuclear engineer and energy advisor at Fairwinds Associates Incorporated. We're now going to proceed to the question and answer period for today's news event. And in starting to do so, we will turn to the operator, who will explain how it is that you can pose your questions.
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone. If you decide to withdraw your question, please press star, then 2 to remove yourself from the list. Please limit yourself to one question and a single follow-up. If you need to ask an additional question, please know that you may press star 1 to rejoin the queue.
And we will have the operator back on the line as necessary during the Q&A period so that you can hear those instructions and participate during the Q&A period. Again, we have two speakers who will be able to respond to your questions. I want to emphasize as we move into the Q&A period that the report and related news release that you heard described in detail by the two opening speakers is available to you on the web at the website for the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy at www.cleanenergy.org. On the homepage, you will see a very prominent video that walks through the key study findings. And then if you turn to the news and reports back page of the site, you'll find the top item in the press room is the news release, which has an embedded copy of the study in it. With that, operator, let's turn to our first question.
The first question is from Bill Poovey from AP. Please go ahead, sir.
Is Mr. Smith there? I had a question for him.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you. And where in this process, if TVA board goes ahead as expected, can you expect to stop this? Isn't the momentum already there? And it's just, granted you're making your case, but where is it most likely that you could stop this project in what we have remaining in terms of permit applications and so forth based on your experience in the past? Where do we expect to see this most closely scrutinized?
Well, the first thing we're trying to do with this report is make sure that all the board members fully understand the magnitude and the risk associated with their potential decision on August 18th. Some of this information has been made available publicly before, but never have we seen it all tied together. And then I do believe the issues of the groundwater intrusion and the Progress Energy issues that have been developing, particularly more this spring, is new information that the relationships have not been tied together. I think that there's two ways. SACE will continue to look for every opportunity within the regulatory process to make sure that these issues are properly reviewed by the NRC and any other regulatory agency. And there are still a lot of opportunities in the future that we believe that will unfold, because in the NRC's most recent Fukushima, or the Japanese disaster review, they single out both Watts Bar 2 and Belafonte in that. And we believe that there is an opportunity, and you will be learning in the future that we will be filing additional contentions in response to that, because these issues with containment are one of the aspects that failed on a grand scale, unfortunately, in Japan. And so I think those issues are very live and relevant with the NRC's review. But more importantly, and what Arnie, I think, has indicated and what we believe will unfold is that the NRC, if they're doing their job, will have to be drawing the relationships between Crystal River 3 and the catastrophic failures that are happening there in attempt to retension those cables. And those lessons learned, so to speak, which are not positive at this time for TVA, are going to be applied at TVA. And so we fully expect that the NRC, and we would certainly hope, will require TVA to do a comprehensive analysis of their containment. We believe that the detensioning and retensioning of these suspension cables is going to become a larger issue within the NRC's regulatory role, and we believe that those are going to become issues that TVA is not going to have with our organization, but they're going to have with the regulator, and we believe those are going to potentially be extremely costly, if not insurmountable. The groundwater intrusion, the breakdown of QA, quality assurance and quality control, the unique reactor design. Remember, Arnie touched on this. The 205 design has never been licensed in the United States. TVA currently only has a construction permit. They have not secured the operating permit for Bellefonte. And no company in the United States has ever secured an operating permit for a Babcock-Wilcox 205 design. And so you can just begin to see this litany of challenges and hurdles that TVA is going to have to overcome with the regulator. And it is our hope that the regulator will do their job. As an organization that is a watchdog, we will do everything we can to bring these issues to light with the regulator and with the decision makers at TVA. But the bottom line is this is an extremely risky decision, and we think that TVA has better options that they could pursue.
Is there a follow-up question? If not, we'll move on to our next question, operator.
Our next question is from Brian Lawson, Huntsville Times. Please go ahead, sir.
Hey, either one of you guys can take this, but I'm interested in view of what you've looked at. How do you square TVA's projections, both in terms of a would-be construction schedule and a cost estimate, with what you sort of expect it would take now?
That's a great question. I let me just mention that back in the 80s, when Zimmer was on a similar trajectory, initially Zimmer said, "Well, we have a little QA problem," and my company actually provided their quality assurance support, and they asked for about 20 people to resolve that particular problem. And then those 20 people found out that, oh, my God, there's a lot more quality assurance problems here than we thought. And it went to 60, and then it went to about 200. And at the peak, we had 400 quality assurance people from my company when I was the vice president there working at Zimmer. And when you get into a cycle like this where the quality is in question and additional resources are brought in an attempt to resolve the initial problem, very often it opens up a can of worms and you discover, in fact, many more problems. As opposed to making problems go away, you actually find a lot that need to be resolved. It would not surprise me. TVA is right now saying between $4 and $5 billion. And if you look at Washington Public Power Unit 1, they were estimating $4 to $5 billion 8 years ago. Washington Public Power was at 65% complete at the time, and their QA system had never been dismantled. The plant had stayed in the official deferred status. The plant was well maintained. The proper oils, the proper air, the proper maintenance was being done to make sure that if they wanted to start the plant up, they could. Now, TVA was not in that position for about 2.5 years, and yet TVA is coming in with almost the identical estimate that Washington Power had 8 years ago. It would not surprise me if the estimates on Bellefonte are wrong by a factor of 2 to 3. In other words, instead of 4, I could see it going to between 8 and 10 billion, rather. On that unit, and it wouldn't surprise me to add 3 to 4 more years to the construction process. Instead of 2018, I could see it going to 2022. And, you know, when I'm sure that the board, has an eye on the financial ledger here. And what may make sense at $4 billion is not going to make sense at $10 billion. And it's very much a case of throwing good money after bad, I think.
And let me jump in, Brian. There are two things that I think you're, well, one, I'm sure you're aware of, and two, that you may not be, and others on the phone may not be. First of all, TVA has a statutory limit of a $30 billion debt ceiling. And so TVA, I've described this as TVA is kind of flying into a box canyon here. By locking themselves into this decision, they can't really go to the left, so to speak, because they're now having to make decisions about their coal-fired power plants and other things like that. And if they don't diversify their portfolio and they lock themselves on this sort of bet the ranch on the nuclear power projects, they're boxed in on that side. On the other side, they're boxed in because they really don't have the same access to capital. And with the $30 billion debt ceiling, you're not going to be able to, without an act of Congress, to raise TVA's debt ceiling, which I think is highly questionable now in the current political environment. They don't have the wiggle room that they did, say, in the 70s to sort of throw good money after bad. They're bumping right up against that. And what they're flying straight into, are these, eight almost insurmountable things that they have to overcome with the regulator to get it right. So I think TVA is in a really unique situation there financially. They don't really have the flexibility to lock themselves into a project that has the high potential of having dramatic cost overruns. I think that's very key. The other thing that I would say is that, and Arnie pointed this out very shrewdly to us in a conversation we had earlier, is the NRC will probably never tell TVA, you can't do this. What they'll do is they'll just keep telling TVA they have to go and fix the various things and that they're not comfortable with it yet. And as a regulator, for whatever reason, the NRC may just never say, no, you can't go forward, per se. They'll just keep telling TVA things they have to go get us this rock, go get us that rock, you've got to fix this, you've got to fix that, because as a regulator, they're not comfortable. And so TVA can get into this loop where they constantly are trying to get over the hurdles with the NRC, but the NRC is not comfortable with the decision to go forward. And you already see that in when TVA asked for reinstatement of the construction permit after they lost it, and they lost the quality assurance, quality control, and they came back to the NRC and said, please give it to us. It was a controversial decision. It was not a unanimous decision at the NRC. Even though they did grant them the ability to do that, it was almost as if saying, okay, if you want to go here, you can. But they are going to require them to do enormous things to convince them that this plant has the proper documentation for quality assurance, quality control, which we don't believe TVA will ever be able to overcome. Now, they could spend billions of dollars chasing that direction.
Thank you.
Our next question, operator.
The next question is from Daniel Potter, Nashville Public Radio. Please go ahead.
You mentioned other options that TVA would have if it chose not to pursue this. Can you build that out a little bit, what else TVA could invest in or build up instead?
Absolutely. TVA has, again, this is Stephen Smith, TVA has completed a comprehensive 20-year planning document. And while in that document Bellefonte plays a key role, it was very clear to us that with just minor tweaks of that document, TVA could continue to grow their commitments to energy efficiency, because in that document they level off in the about the time frame that Bellefonte would be coming on. If they continue to pursue energy efficiency aggressively, they could moderate the need for Bellefonte. TVA does not have a coherent, credible program on renewable energy, which was highlighted in the IRP and needs to be corrected. They made minor commitments to renewable energy, but that certainly is an opportunity. And there is an unprecedented transition that's happening in the natural gas industry, whether you agree or disagree with hydraulic fracturing. The price of natural gas and the availability of natural gas has taken a fundamental course adjustment that many are projecting now, even TVA projecting, will allow natural gas to play a bigger role. And in the effort of retiring coal plants and looking at additional power, TVA, I think, has in their arsenal the ability to do more efficiency, the ability to do significantly more renewables, and the ability to look at natural gas at a higher degree than they have thus far. And to TVA's credit, they're looking at efficiency and they're looking at gas. They just haven't got a credible renewable program yet. So we believe that there are directions for TVA to go. You know, we as an organization have not been advocating that TVA shut down all of their nuclear power plants. We recognize that TVA's made those commitments. What we are fundamentally opposed to, though, is the Bellefonte decision, in that it is an order of magnitude more risky decision than anything that TVA has undertaken thus far.
Is there a follow-up question?
Assuming TVA does go forward with this plan, is there anything they could do differently that would reassure you or that would improve the viability of this project?
Well, let me take a first stab from our organization's perspective. Arnie may have a perspective from a nuclear engineer. We're not convinced that Bellefonte is salvageable. I think that if you look at any one of these issues that we've brought to your attention, they are major issues that could call into question the completion of a nuclear power reactor. I think it is the collective body of evidence here about the troubled history, the unique design, the lessons that we're learning from Crystal River 3 and its catastrophic failure of containment, and other things like that, that when you couple these together, it leads you to, I think, only one conclusion, that this is a bad bet for the Tennessee Valley. And it has both financial and environmental and human health concerns associated with it. So I don't see how they can overcome all of those. There may be one or two of them that they can correct, but if you add them in total, it is a daunting hill to climb. It is a daunting canyon for TVA to fly itself out of, because they're really boxing themselves in here.
Let me just add to that. I agree on the construction problems are formidable individually, and yet you've got, you know, six or seven construction problems. And then what are you left with come 2022? You're left with a plant that's 52 years old and hasn't cranked out an electron yet. So now when you go to start this plant up with a foundation that's not as good as it should have been, and et cetera, I think you're looking at the likelihood, if you get through the construction period, of a troubled operation as well. You know, the NRC seems to let all these plants get 20 extra years on their license. So you're looking at a plant that at the end of its life will be 110 years old. And when you start to amortize these costs out, like I'm sure the board is, there's an assumption that it will run 40 years to spread the cost out or 60 years to spread the cost out. But when in fact those 60 years are when it's 100 years old, it is not likely that you'll be able to amortize those costs out on a plant whose structure is that old. There's this thing called the AMP, the Aging Management Program, that nuclear plants look at. And within the nuclear industry, there's a thing called the Gall Report, and there are hurdles that can be overcome as a plant ages. But the hurdle that cannot be overcome is concrete. And you can always replace a pipe or you can always replace a wire, but the concrete is degrading. And this concrete's got a 50-year head start before the plant ever starts to operate. Between the groundwater issues and the containment issues on the concrete, it's not likely that you'll be able to amortize the costs of the construction over a normal lifetime expectancy that the industry is used to.
Let's proceed to our next question, operator.
The next question is from Bill Freeburn from Platts. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Yeah, hi. In connection with the concrete issues, I'm wondering if you can discuss sort of whether there's any evidence, what the evidence is for the concrete degradation due to water intrusion, and sort of how much might have been damaged or what form that damage might take, and I'm curious as to where that information is coming from.
This is Arne Gunderson. The initial information comes from the differing professional opinion called the DPO of Joe Williams, who was the NRC's project manager on Bellefonte, who felt very strongly that Bellefonte should not be relicensed. He filed a DPO within the NRC, and I believe that's also on the SACE website. He's the one who noted that the foundation issues were significant. Since then, I went back over inspection reports from 2009, 2010, and 2011, and the NRC has twice been on site looking at foundation issues, but the inspection reports are so vague that they were just not an effective gauge of the problem. But that twice in the last 2 years, the NRC has had crews on site looking at concrete degradation is for sure. That's in the public document room. But there are no meeting notes available of those meetings in the NRC records.
And on the issue of the similarity to the Crystal River problem, are you saying that they would have to detension a substantial number of the tendons to do the testing? I thought they could probably do that one tendon at a time.
There was a licensee event report when the first tendon exploded, and there have been four follow-up reports on about a 5 month interval. So about 5 months after that, yeah, that's about right. The fourth report was just issued, and they are planning to completely detension that containment, in part because of the one tendon that exploded, but also in reports one and two, they discovered sulfites in the tendons, which are corrosive, and then another report discovered moisture in the tendons. So they've made the decision to inspect all the tendons, but the bigger issue is that the and if it were just that, they probably could go a tendon by a tendon. I'm not sure that wouldn't induce the same crack that they have at Crystal River. I'm not sure that there's not a crack there right now because of that sudden explosion of the one tendon. And Tennessee Valley Authority has not looked. It's not a difficult process. Probably for something on the order of $200,000 or $300,000, you could ultrasonically inspect the area where those tendons have failed to see if a delamination has started already. And for some reason, Tennessee Valley Authority has not chosen to do that. But on the broader issue, so we've got a containment with one tendon that's blown up and two tendons that have sulfide and moisture in them, in a random sample of tendons. But TVA is going to have to drill a hole in the side of the containment to put in new steam generators. Remember, they cannibalized the steam generators and sold the pipe, the copper tubes, on the scrap market. So they need a new steam generator. Now they're portraying that as an improvement to the plant, but in fact the only reason they need a new steam generator is because they gutted the old one. In the process of cutting that hole in, they will be in exactly the situation that Crystal River is in now. So a detensioning will have to occur. And on top of that, they've already had tendons explode. So they're actually as at risk as Crystal River is, if not more so. And lastly, Crystal River was heavily analyzed in 2008 before they did this, and yet they put a 60-foot-long crack in theirs. And then they were heavily analyzed in 09 and 010 when they realized they had a crack. And yet in 2011, it happened again. I was at I've spoken to the Advisory Committee on Reactor Safeguards three times on containments, once on Beaver Valley, once on Millstone, and once on the AP1000. So I've been there a lot. And I was discussing containments with the ACRS back in 2009 on Millstone. And incredibly, the NRC staff said they don't have the capability to analyze a containment, and they rely on the vendors. So the vendors have failed at Crystal River, and the NRC doesn't have the capability to assure that they're getting it right. Maybe it will succeed, but again, if I was on the board, it's a management risk that that really I think has been underestimated by TVA.
And Arnie, this is Steve. Let me add one thing. You may want to elaborate on this a little more. One of the things that Arnie helped us understand was that these tendons run through the concrete in an effort to strengthen the concrete by putting it under pressure. And in a very similar way that when you have to put certain parts on cars or whatever, they have to be tensioned in an exact way, both when they're released and when they're tightened back up. Do you want to talk about that just a minute, Arnie?
Yeah. When you, if you've ever put a head on a car engine, or when if you've ever tightened the wheels on your as you're putting a tire on a car, you don't tighten one bolt down and then go to the next and tighten it all the way down and go to the next. There's a pattern. You know, you do one and then you go to the opposite one. And on a head gasket, there might be 10 or 12 bolts. So you slowly bring the pressure down, and then you go back and slowly bring the pressure down uniformly. So when one tendon blows like this, it creates an asymmetry inside the containment. And as I said before, I'm not sure that it already has induced a delamination. And I'm actually surprised that TVA hasn't wanted to look. Again, these cracks are not visible from either the outside or the inside. They're in the middle. And the only way to find them is by ultrasonically sending a signal in and having the signal bounce back.
Our next question, operator.
The next question is from Stephen McLam, WAFF-TV. Please go ahead.
Yes, I was just kind of curious, maybe for Arnie, is there a design that you find out there that's real good as far as efficiency and safety that has a good track record? Could Belfont be retooled to that, or is it just basically needs to go to scrap?
I'm sorry, I had a really hard time hearing that. Could our moderator restate it?
Could we have the caller restate the question? I think it may be a question of being on speakerphone. I'm not sure, though, judging from the sound quality.
It is. What I was going to ask was, is there, for Arnie, is there a good design out there that's got a proven track record out there as far as safety and as far as efficiency? And could Belafonte be retooled to that, or should it just be scrapped?
The reactor in the world that has the there's safety in numbers here. The reactor that has the best numbers, if you will, is the Westinghouse four loop plant, and there are dozens of them worldwide, and they're the most modern Westinghouse reactor in the old design, if you will, but. It's like giving a patient a heart transplant to change the reactor. I think the reason TVA is proposing to continue to construct Belafonte is that they plan to reuse the containment, and they and if you're going to change the reactor, if you're going to change the heart of the plant, you have to change the building it's in too, because they are entirely different. This reactor, the Babcock and Wilcox design, there's only eight of them, is a taller reactor than any other in the world because it has something called a candy cane. The hot leg goes into the top of the steam generator as opposed to into the bottom, which makes the reactor taller, makes the containment taller and heavier. Not only is the reactor unique, but the Babcock and Wilcox containment is also unique, which might be a contributing factor in Crystal River as well. Other Westinghouse plants have replaced the steam generators and not cracked. This B&W plant replaced its steam generator and did. So TVA is studying Crystal River, and they've acknowledged to the NRC that they don't plan to do anything yet, but they continue to study what's going on at Crystal River out of concern that they could easily have the same problem happen to their reactor.
Is there a follow-up question?
No, thank you.
Okay. Operator, do we have another question in the queue?
We do have a follow-up question from Bill Freeburn from Platts. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks. I figure since I've got you here, I hope you might answer a question related to the approval, completion of the final safety review by NRC for the AP1000 and for the Vogel COLs, which has apparently just come out in the last day or two. And so I'm wondering if either of you would like to make a comment about the completion of that safety review, which is Westinghouse is saying that's a milestone for their AP1000.
Arnie, do you want to say anything to that?
I've been following the technical issues on the AP1000, but not really the licensing. And actually, I prepared a report for Friends of the Earth recently around the time of post-Fukushima, suggesting that the AP1000 be slowed down to include some Fukushima containment issues. But really, I have not been following the licensing. There's three people, Tom Clements at Friends of the Earth and Jim Warren at NC Warren would probably be the two that I would think would know about the licensing ramifications. Like I said, I'm just a technical geek on that.
Yeah, and the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy is an intervener in the Vogel cases, and we continue to have serious concerns about that, and we believe that as time goes on, Southern Company is already experiencing, we think, some slips in their schedule, although there tends to be a six-month delay before that gets reported back to the Public Service Commission, and we believe that reactor, the prices are already extraordinary and have skyrocketed over the years. We'll continue to have issues and problems, but I would have to check with some of my staff on the latest status with Vogel particularly.
I believe that is the last question that we have in the queue. I want to make sure that you've been listening to a news event sponsored by the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. The purpose of today's report is to release the new study, the new analysis of TVA's Bellefonte nuclear reactor. That report, related news release, available to you on the web at the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy website, www.cleanenergy.org. That's cleanenergy.org. You can find a video that details some of the key study findings and features Mr. Gunderson on the homepage of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy at cleanenergy.org. And if you turn to the news and reports back page in the press room area, the top item you will find is the news release for today, as well as an embedded copy of the study that's being released. Again, you heard from two speakers today, Stephen Smith, Executive Director of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, and report author Arnold Gunderson, a nuclear engineer and energy advisor at Fairwinds Associates, Incorporated. You've been listening to a news event sponsored by the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. That concludes today's event. Thank you.